and then it dawned on me. I nearly choked with indignation. She was using her poison on me.
Please, I would be ever so grateful.
Yeah, somehow I thought better of her. Does she really want the figurine so bad she'd take such a risk? Stacy? A plan emerged in my head, but I had to wrestle with myself a bit before putting it into action.
Man, dear, they would make such a perfect gift. Pretty please, with sugar on top.
Stacy was trying her best, even blushing from the effort. Right. It was time to act.
Sweetest Stacy.
I fell to my knees before the girl. Somebody stop me. So you need the figurines, eh? Let's see how much I've learned from your acting lessons.
Stacy, my darling.
I started to do what I had been fantasizing about ever since I first found out about this girl. I grabbed her legs in an embrace and started to make my way up, exploring the girl's game avatar in the most brazen manner.
Stacy, baby. Man, the chess pieces, where are they?
Stacy's face was a picture of revulsion, but that only amused me. I was well aware that this was only a digital copy of the girl, that her filters were probably turned on, and she couldn't feel my touch. But she could see everything all right. It took me a minute to get to my feet, all the while keeping Anastaria in my embrace. The girl wasn't even trying to resist. She was convinced that I had completely succumbed to her poison. Well, the shit's about to hit the fan. Although it's hard not to admit that this is one of the more pleasant adventures.
Man, the figurines, she repeated forcefully, when just a dozen centimeters remained between our faces.
I leaned over to her ear and whispered, "In your dreams, sweetheart. If you do this again, I'll summon a herald and say that you've been trying to gain control over my character. Shall I tell you what would happen next?" And then I saw that for which I had put on this entire performance, starting with falling on my knees. Fear appeared in the Lady Paladin's eyes. Fear that she was just a pawn in this game. Damn, I was relishing this.
How? Stacy whispered. There are no antidotes to this.
You're smart, and will have plenty of time on your hands to figure it out. And now,
farewell.
I leaned over and kissed her on the lips. I'll consider that a bonus. Whatever she was like in reality, right now I had a very beautiful, frightened woman in my hands. It would have been wrong not to kiss her. Too bad it wasn't reciprocated. That would have been very nice. But this will do. I let go of the baffled girl, took out one of the scrolls I got from the keeper, and activated the portal. It was time I got back to Beatwick, to receive the herd of cows, complete the quest, drop by Elizabeth to clear things up with her, and prepare for the fight with the Mist Beast.
Man!
Anastaria's shout caught me just as I stepped through the portal. I looked back at the girl's sparkling eyes and raised an eyebrow in surprise.
Who are you?
Chapter 11. The Mist Monster and New Discoveries. The scrolls were a letdown. I came out of the portal right in the center of Beatwick Square, where you usually ended up, if not bound to a specific spot. A pity, as it would have been good to settle the matter of the coordinator straight away.
Man, you're back already? What about the cows?
Tisha appeared next to me. Aren't they here yet? I was surprised. According to my estimates, the herd should have been in place by now.
Why on earth?
Tisha began, but was interrupted by a guard running up to us.
There! We! The cows have come home!
He said, out of breath from his run.
We won't be going to fetch them, though.
Why? Frowned the girl.
There are goblins and the wild pack. They're pacing around the cows as if waiting for something.
Well, I'll be. Did the escort really have instructions to hand them over to me personally? What would the villagers think if I started speaking in goblin? They might go straight for their pitchforks. A speedy disengagement was in order.
Mayan, what are we going to do?
The headman's daughter started to sound worried.
Father is busy, brothers are away, and Slate is gone as well. We have no one to go to the goblins.
I will go. I just happen to know goblin language. I'll go and ask what they want. Maybe they've come to apologize, and you're all fretting over nothing. Where is everyone? Only now did Tisha's words sink in.
My brothers rode off to hunt the mist monster.
Who? Asked the guard, who was still loitering nearby.
It doesn't matter. And Slate went to travel round the villages to fix things. Will you really go?
I'll go, don't you worry. The wild pack was pacing by the smithy, trying not to come near the gates. The poor cows, eyes wild with terror from such attendance, huddled by the stockade, threatening to topple it with their weight. There was little cause to worry, however. This wasn't reality. In Barleona, even the most flimsy-looking fence could be an impenetrable wall. Not a single cow would get through.
"Here's the herd," said one of the goblins, as soon as I came out of the gates. "We were told to hand it over to you, in person. Now we go back."
With this, they turned around and sped away from the village. Somewhat perplexed, I stood there watching the departing cloud of dust when the gates opened and people poured out of them.
"What did they say?"
Tisha started to question me right away. They apologized, saying they made a mistake and won't do it again. I told a blatant lie, since it was unlikely anyone else understood what the goblin had barked.
Count the cows.
The headman finally appeared, looking like he had been torn away from his work.
We have to be sure that they all came back.
10 are missing!
Someone shouted straight away.
These green mugs pinched 10 cows!
Tisha and the headman were noticeably disheartened.
That's very bad, the village boss said. 10 cows less would be a heavy blow to the village. We'll have to replace the missing ones by buying more in Farstead. But that's for us to worry about. Thank you, Mayan. You did an honest job of this assignment.
Quest, returning the herd completed. Completion percentage 80%. You received +100 to reputation with the Krong province, +300 experience, +80 silver.
That's it? What was the point of running after the herd for such a measly reward? I was expecting more, somehow. I read through the quest conditions once again. Variable. How much does a cow cost in Farstead? I asked the headman, as he was about to leave.
5,000 a head, but I can probably bargain a 30% discount if I buy all 10 in one go. But where would we get so much money? I just don't have that amount on me right now. I'll have to think of something.
What a snag! Damned imitator in charge of this quest! Even counted the money that was taken off me automatically. A 30% discount. Does that mean I fooled that goblin for nothing? And what if I didn't ask the castle keeper for anything? Was I supposed to have volunteered my own gold? Interesting quests they have in this area.
Wait! I stopped the headman and handed him all the money that I got from the goblin in the Cartus Castle. Here you go. I believe I am partly at fault here. I failed to get the entire herd back. On one hand, easy come, easy go. But on the other hand, minus 35,000 gold, I tried not to even think about what I was doing when I handed over the money. And the main thing, why am I doing this if I have three people in Anhurs living on short rations? I'm acting like a major spendthrift.
I have nothing to give you in return.
The headman visibly swallowed as his greedy gaze fell on the money.
I can promise only one thing. If you are ever in need, I will come to your aid.
Take it already. I'm not doing this for something, but simply because. I had no idea what I just said, but it had a good ring to it. When the time comes, we'll square up. You have received plus 500 to reputation with the Krong province, plus 500 experience, plus 2 to all the main stats. Now was the turn for my jaw to drop in surprise. Reputation is a good thing, for sure, and I've already reached friendly with Krong, but plus 2 to all the main stats? That's just super! It may not be much, but it's in the stat hard currency. I thought that such quests were available only from level 90. It's so nice to be wrong sometimes. Moreover, the promise of help from the headman, something tells me that it will come in useful when I find out the identity of the coordinator.
I heard you're having problems with Elizabeth,
the headman asked when I finally scraped my jaw off the floor. When did he get so well informed?
Do you need a new place to stay?
No, I'll go visit her now, and I think that we'll come to an understanding. Thank you for your concern.
If you need anything, just drop by. I will be in.
The visibly cheered up headman went off to his house. Right. The time had now come to find out who Elizabeth really was.
"Didn't I tell you? Don't come here any more!"
came Beth's angry shout as soon as I entered the gates. "Yes, you did. I won't dispute that." I checked the level of attractiveness just in case. 83 points. That should be enough for a chat, and then we'll see. I won't go anywhere until we talk. And no need to turn around so pointedly. I didn't bring the herd back to be speaking to a back.
You brought back the herd?
There was now uncertainty in the woman's voice, and I decided to take advantage of it.
And what about the people?
The situation with the people is not as good. Those who changed can't be brought back. They've become goblins forever. But at least now the villagers of Beatwick won't be going hungry. I think I earned the right to a conversation. Let me tell you what I know, and then you can decide for yourself whether to chuck me out or not. You shouldn't make decisions in a moment of passion, priestess. The last word made Elizabeth start.
I am no longer a priestess. The goddess has turned away from me.
Of course she did. And yet in your anger you threw my reputation with the priestesses of Aluna straight into mistrust. How can a former priestess, from whom the goddess has turned away, remove reputation, especially to such a degree? Tell me, were you a high priestess? The last phrase was intended as a joke. As far as I knew, the High Priestess is the top rank in the hierarchy, and it's virtually impossible to remove her from her position.
Yes.
Tears appeared in Beth's eyes.
10 years ago, I was the High Priestess of Aluna in Anhurs, but I was removed as soon as... You're lying! I couldn't have removed reputation!
With those last words, Beth was shouting.
Mom! Are you okay?
Clowder popped out of the house.
"Hi, man. Are you the one that's upset Mum?"
"It's all right, dear. Everything's all right," said the woman, wiping away her tears. "It's just that Mayan told me a story, which I had almost believed. Everything's all right."
"A story? Some joke that was. High Priestess!" It was my turn to be indignant. "Oh, no, you better take a look." I did something I would have never done with another player, gave full access to my reputation table. From it, you could see straight away whom I've met and have been in touch with. Before meeting you, Shaman Mayan never met Priestesses of Eluna, as the Emperor is my witness. I called Barleona's most dangerous arbiter as a witness. A cloud of light immediately formed around me and quickly dissipated, leaving me unharmed. Calling on the Emperor is the final argument in communications both with other players and NPCs. Only free citizens are able to call upon the Emperor, at least those not sporting a red headband. This would have come in really useful at the mine, especially when Bat set me up that first time by taking my rat skins. When a player calls upon the Emperor, a special imitator is activated. It analyzes the words of the summons, looks up the game logs, checks the truth or falsehood of the words, and then surrounds the player either by a light dome, showing that he was right, or by a dark one, which comes with a 3-month debuff of -50% to all stats. Moreover, the owner of the dark dome gets a special bonus, -10% to levels. All the players are informed of these facts, so there have never been any complaints. Although it did occur to me that prisoners were never told these rules, but placed directly in the mines, I should write to tech support, making them aware of this omission. How could they fail to foresee the possibility of someone leaving the mines, removing the headband, and calling the Emperor as a witness? Or is it that they didn't tell me the rules because I had played before? Right, this is unimportant. A dumbfounded priestess of Eluna was now standing in front of me wide-eyed as she read my reputation table. Admittedly, there were many interesting things to see there.
"You know the Emperor?"
That wasn't the question that I expected from Beth once she had come round. "No, the Herald handed that to me." There was little sense in deceiving the lady.
"A herald cannot increase favor with the Emperor without his knowledge. You can trust me on this one. It's not for nothing that I was, that I am, a priestess of Eluna."
"Your reputation with priestesses of Goddess Eluna has increased by 1,000 points. Current level, neutral. You are 995 points away from the status of friendly."
"Forgive me. We really should have spoken right at the start. Then we might have prevented all of this from happening. Come, we shouldn't repeat past mistakes. And, Mayan,"
the priestess turned towards me,
"keep calling me Beth. I like that." "It all started 10 years ago,"
began the lady when we settled down in her house.
"My husband was one of the assistants to Advisor Brast, and I, as you already know, was the High Priestess of Eluna. My husband stumbled upon information about a Cottis plan for a takeover of Malabar. First we thought it was a bad joke, but gradually we became convinced of the truth of this information. We informed Brast of this, but were only laughed at and called scaremongers. None of the advisors that we approached in a vain attempt to get the message through took us seriously. Then we approached the Emperor directly, bypassing the heralds and the advisors. The Emperor heard us out, and then..."
Beth sighed bitterly.
"We were banished as panic spreaders and as a threat to the integrity of the Empire. My husband was appointed as the headman in Beatwick, and I was stripped of my rank.
We governed this village for 8 years, until my husband disappeared. That's the end of our story. I already told you about the curse. 2 years ago, I noticed that our lands, and as I started to travel between villages looking for a new place to live, the lands of the neighboring villages too, began to be darkened. Someone was putting a curse on them. I appealed to the headman, but there was nothing he could do for me. Magic was beyond his understanding. His main concern was that the people and the cows were safe. I didn't even bother approaching the priest. He wasn't interested in anything except wine. I wrote letters to my former sisters asking for help, only to be rebuked for thinking up non-existent problems. I considered talking with the village residents, but then thought, to what end? They have nowhere else to go, and they wouldn't even bother hearing me out. Then I decided to try and protect Beatwick all by myself. Every 7 days, I put Iluna's blessing on the villagers. A few months later, the mist monster turned up and tried to break my concentration. One of the villagers was summoning him. This could mean only one thing. We had a traitor in our midst, someone who wanted to plunge our region into the abyss of darkness. There was no one I could trust. So when you turned up and started running around in search of the monster, I thought all of this was arranged for your benefit. I was even glad that the headman assigned you to live with me. I thought it would be easier to keep an eye on you. How wrong I was.
And I first thought that you were actually the mist monster, and then that you were a demonologist who summoned it, I said, somewhat lost. That's just crazy. I had the High Priestess of Iluna, albeit a former one, sitting right in front of me. So I decided to catch you to stop you summoning the mist beast. Very smart of me, too. I could have just had a chat with you.
I'm no demonologist.
Yeah, I got that already.
We're as bad as each other, though. What are we going to do now? I don't know. I plan to perform the blessing again today, since without it, many have begun to succumb.
Can you really have the entire village under suspicion?
Why, everyone. I tried to catch the mist beast, as you call him, together with the headman and his family several times, but we've failed each time. You know that they're...
Beth fell silent, looking at me in question. Vagrants? Yes, I know. We've tried working together twice before, but the first time I followed you, and the second time I was hunting you.
You followed me?
How else did I find out where you were doing your sorcery?
I don't do sorcery. I bless.
Yes, my mistake. By the way, why in the cemetery?
The cemetery is the only area that remains untainted. The temple protects it.
And what did you mean by saying your husband disappeared?
Exactly that. One day he went out of the house and never came back. The border with the Freelands is a very dangerous place, frequently roamed by monsters. We had waited for a very long time before reporting what happened to Farstead. I tried summoning him with magic, but without the High Priestess's amulet, I can only bless. And also, as it turned out, change the attitude of other sisters. So I know nothing of my husband's fate,
said Beth sadly.
I've come to terms with it by now. It's been 2 years, after all. Aftondil is growing, and I'm trying to teach him everything that I know. He has no aptitude for magic, but would excel as a warrior. Good manners would come in useful, too. When he grows up, he will leave for the big world. Only I am barred from returning there. The banishment has not been imposed on the children.
Were you banished forever, or for a certain time?
Forever. We will only be able to come back in one case, if the Emperor acknowledges that we were acting on his instructions, and he would never do that. Who am I that he should concern himself with me? So now I'll have to live here for the rest of my life.
I took a certain interesting ring out of the bag and looked at its properties. The person presenting this ring is acting on my instructions and for the good of Malabar. A moment of truth. On the one hand, I had about 1,000,000 gold on my hands. That is approximately the price for which you could sell the ring to someone who was forbidden to enter the Emperor's palace. In effect, a complete free pass. A correction of a mistake. On the other hand, in front of me I had a woman, even if she was just an NPC, who was in need of help, who had already given up on ever getting it, and who was a high priestess of Iluna. If she returns to Anhurst, she is bound to assume that position once again. What's better, 1,000,000 gold or a high priestess of the High Goddess in your debt? A good question, to which I had no answer. I had to think this over.
"Mayan, is anything wrong?" asked Beth, concerned. "Did I upset you in some way?"
"No, not at all. I was just lost in thought." I put the ring back in the bag. This wasn't the time for it. "I propose that we try to catch the Mist Beast together in 6 days' time. We'll invite Tisha to come with us. We will come from one end of the village and the headman and his sons from the other. This time we'll catch it for sure. What do you say?"
"You know, let's do it. I'll put up the blessing today, which should last 7 days, so I should be free on the night that the Mist Beast will appear. It's good that you thought of Tisha. It will be easier with a vagrant. Will you speak to the headman, or shall I?"
"I'll go. So, then, can I continue to live here?" Beth only smiled in reply. But her smile and eyes were so full of promise that I couldn't help swallowing, which provoked a ringing laugh from the pretty woman. Next morning I decided to busy myself with the most important task for any player, leveling up. My plan was simple. If there were no mobs in the area, I would have to create them, and I was able to create a mob only from one being in the game, Draco. There was no ban on dueling between two sentients. My totem was a sentient, so I could probably fight him. No reason why he can't do it. In any case, I had to have a proper look at his settings. What if there's something interesting there? After I made the arrangements with the headman about the large-scale hunt for the Mist Beast, I headed for the forest. Aside from Beth's family, no one knew about the dragon, so I didn't want to show him in the open, unnecessarily. He was still small. After making sure that I was alone, I summoned my totem and immediately went into his settings. Not that many settings, in the end. By level 36, Draco gathered 72 free stat points. This came to 2 per level. Not a lot. Playing with Clouder had only increased his agility and stamina. With me, he leveled up in intellect. What a coefficient was, and why there were 6 of them, I had no idea. The same went for direction. In the hope of looking up the properties of the ladder, I pressed that slot, and a window popped up with the following list: fire, water, air, and earth. Ah, what's this? An opportunity to choose the direction of the totem's development? If I'm a water expert, then...
"The chosen direction of the totem's development, water. Attention, totem modification has commenced."
Draco stopped flying around in circles and began to curiously examine the shield that had begun to surround him.
"What is this?"
the totem asked in a slightly scared voice.
"Don't worry. It'll be fine. This will hurt a little. You'll just have to hang in there."
I remembered my own modification, so I thought to warn the dragon.
"All right. I wouldn't..."
I had no time to hear what the totem wouldn't, because the dome covered him on all sides. The shape that formed rose about a meter above the ground and then turned bright red with flashes of fire spreading across it. A couple of seconds later, a burning 2-meter sphere was hanging in the air. I had little time to soak up the rays of Barleona's second sun before the terrible roar of the dragon had shaken the surrounding land. The roar was so piercing, crushing, and oppressive that my feet gave way and I fell to the ground. A steady stream of messages flashed before my eyes, telling me that I was landed with various unpleasant properties. Upon glancing at the list of debuffs, I was blown away. Did my totem really do this?
Stun. Duration, 60 seconds. Does not affect the owner or a friendly group of players. Muteness. Fear. Armor reduction.
In total, I managed to count over 20 negative effects that Draco saddled me with before they vanished. Impressive. I should use this when leveling up through hunting mobs. After some time, the dragon's roar died away, and the fire sphere began to fade. First, the flames disappeared, with the surface becoming bright yellow and then just yellow, later transforming into blue with streams of water coursing through it. The sphere turned into an enormous water droplet with water rushing all around it. Another couple of minutes went by, this time without the dragon's wild roar, and the droplet descended to earth, crumpling and tearing up the grass. There was a subdued clap, and everything vanished, leaving only my totem on the ground, who, breathing heavily, lifted himself on his front legs and started to look himself over. If before the modification the dragon was completely black, now I had a bright, dark blue totem sitting before me. I breathed in deeply. It turned out that all this time I was standing there literally holding my breath. Even the no-air bar had almost filled to the maximum.
"If this is a little, what's simply painful in your view?"
I heard my totem's hoarse voice. "If I told you that it would hurt a lot, would it have made things better?"
"No, but..."
"Then let's forget it. Now you're a black water dragon. Sit still. I'll have to look where you can be improved." I allocated all the free points equally between all the four stats. Draco had to be developed in every direction. One thing that made me especially happy was the presence of a plus items column. This meant that I could find gear for my totem and improve his stats. I took one of the neck chains out of the bag and tried to put it on Draco, but got a message that the item wasn't suitable for this creature. Damn. What do dragons wear if no one believes in them? Where could I find armor for him?
"An interesting feeling," said my flying pet.
He had grown some more during the modification, and now a meter and a half long serpent was flying around me.
"It's as if water is flowing through me."
"What was it like before?"
"Fire. I'm a fire dragon."
Draco stopped and became thoughtful.
"I think..."
"It doesn't matter who you were. It matters who you've become," I noted philosophically. "All right. Let's not waste any time. Shall we try to duel each other?"
"All right, brother. Let's go."
"What did you call me?" I stopped and stared at the dragon. Could his memory be coming back to him?
"Well, you've been calling me different things as well.
If the dragon wasn't so dark, I would have thought he was blushing.
You don't like it?
No, not at all. It's just unexpected. I looked at the embarrassed dragon and continued. Why are we still standing here? Time to duel!
Damage taken.
Draco didn't wait around and attacked straight away.
A sea of fire formed around me, which slowly but surely started to diminish my hit points.
What pleased me the most, and what I secretly hoped for when starting a duel with my totem, was the complete absence of pain. Yes, there was fire roaring all around me, my hit points were sliding, but the curse of the prisoner capsule failed to strike. A totem couldn't inflict pain on his owner. Great! Draco began with a weak wall of fire, though I couldn't help wondering if it was normal for a water dragon to have fire damage, so as not to give me too much of a shock. I understood this when he finally deployed his claws, teeth, roar, and some strange ability spouting jets of flaming water in my direction. Draco stepped up his attack, showing everything he was capable of. As long as the inflicted damage was small, I wasn't too concerned about the outcome of the fight. But as soon as critical hits dealing 400 damage started to land on me every other second, I began to get concerned. It was time I fought back. In the end, I lost the first fight. As soon as I entered the spirit summoning mode to heal myself, the totem started to hurl attacks at me that dealt 600 damage per second. If you take into account my resistances, endurance, and gear, this was a truly enormous figure. I managed to summon only one healing spirit before another of Draco's presence landed on me, worth 1,200 damage this time. My hit points fell to one, and a message appeared before my eyes.
You lost the duel.
It was now time to do some thinking. The totem's base damage was 210 points. Part of this damage was blocked, part of it hit me. This was the case at the start of the fight. Then something incomprehensible had happened. The damage inflicted by the dragon began to grow almost exponentially.
Why?
Appealing to the manual and the forum was quite useless, as per usual. Listen, I decided to ask my totem. Can you explain to me what just happened? Why at the start of the duel you fought like a little kid, and at the end of it hit so hard that I folded right away? This just isn't normal.
You were just standing there, not doing anything. I thought that I wasn't getting anywhere, so I intensified.
Let's go over this bit again, I interrupted. What's this intensification?
It's a property of dragons. I just found out about it myself when we started to fight. I didn't have it before. It turns out that I have 6 levels of intensification. I had only reached the 4th one when you lost. At the 1st level, I can intensify myself by 100%. The intensification lasts only 5 minutes, after which I'll have to wait an hour until it is restored. When the 1st intensification is active, you can activate the 2nd level. This will give you plus 300% to damage for 4 minutes. Each intensification has an independent recharging timer. For example, the 2nd one takes 2 hours to recharge. It's the same with the other levels. But my head aches something terrible afterwards, and my paws are sore, and my tail feels like it's going to fall off.
When I opened the totem's properties, I noticed that his level of intellect had increased by 30%, and the incomprehensible lines titled Acceleration Coefficient, the first 4 at any rate, had increased by 1,000th in value. These lines came without a description, but now I could guess that these coefficients determine the time it took for the dragon intensifications to recharge. The 4 hours I spent dueling with Draco only brought him up by one level, and the first and second level coefficients increased by another 1/1000th. After each intensification, the totem wrinkled in pain, but gritted his teeth and toughed it out. I could imagine how hard it was going to be for him at level 6. Plus 1,100% to damage demands a sizable sacrifice. As for me, my intellect hadn't increased by even 1%, despite the fact that Draco was a much higher level opponent than me. The timer for summoning the totem ran out, and I was left by myself. There were no mobs and no totem. I had no idea how to level up in such a situation. Only the professions remained, which was at least something. There was little point in going to the mines. My mining was already at maximum, and I saw little sense in mining materials that would produce only dark objects. You couldn't sell them to players or make anything good out of them. They were just too dark for that. Now, if they could be cleansed with light, then... Beth! I couldn't restrain myself and ran straight back to Beedwick. I just happened to have Iluna's High Priestess at hand, who must know how to turn cursed things into blessed ones, just switch their polarity somehow. If it was hard to bless neutral things, something that would take a great deal of effort, switching the sign from negative to positive, on the other hand, if this worked, leveling up could wait.
"Mayan, is anything the matter?"
Beth asked me, looking worried, when I flew into her yard, out of breath and disheveled, but practically glowing from what we were about to do.
"Beth, we need to talk. Come."
The surprised woman followed me without any further ado. I shut the door and checked that no one was watching us, making Beth nervous, then closed the shutters and sat at the table, which already had the priestess standing next to it, almost spellbound and ready for whatever I was going to throw at her.
"Mayan, what happened?"
she whispered as soon as I lit a candle.
"Beth, only you and me now stand in the path of darkness. No one knows who is summoning the monster, who is cursing the land, and who wants to drown us all in corruption. But I've come up with a way of surprising them all."
With an ominous tone, I started to mystify an already bewildered woman.
"And what is it?"
Beth's whisper became even quieter.
"Look."
I took out a piece of marble, having first checked that it wanted to be a dark thing.
"If you make something out of this piece of rock, the amount of evil in this world will increase. It wants to be evil. But you are a high priestess. Can you do something to stop this stone being cursed?"
"And that's all?"
Beth's eyes widened.
"You want me to bless a piece of marble? Whatever for? Do you intend to stone the monster with these?"
"Beth, do it first and ask questions later." My plan was threatening to come apart at the seams. "Or is it impossible to change a cursed object?"
"Ha! Huh. You want to change its polarity? Yes, that's easy. Oh, I should have enough strength for a stone like this, but then I'll have to rest for about an hour. I am, after all, a former high priestess. But how would that help you?"
"You'll see. The main thing is for you to do it." Beth took the piece of marble, closed her eyes, and a bright glow surrounded the cursed material. The woman's face grew pale and haggard, blue circles appearing under her eyes, but she unwaveringly continued to hold the item I had given her.
"Here you go,"
the priestess said in a weak voice, handing me the marble.
"I was wrong about the recovery time. An hour wouldn't do it. There's just too much darkness in it, and I no longer have my strength. I will need 3 hours rest, or I'll simply keel over. But that can come later. What did you think up?"
I took the piece of marble from her, which still looked exactly the same as those lying in my bag, and used the essence of things ability on it. There was light, lots of light, joy and kindness, not a single hint of darkness. It had to work. Taking a moment to concentrate, I entered the design mode, moved aside the prepped dwarf warriors, formed an image of the piece of marble I was holding in my hand, opened the recipe for the rose, and embodied it in stone. An ordinary stone rose, which I had made many times. How could this become a blessed object? By itself, it didn't seem enough. Without much ado, I placed the image of Anastaria in the central round petals of the rose. Of everyone I knew, only she could fit the description of a goddess. The only thing I changed was removing the arrogance from her eyes and adding more gentle kindness instead. I didn't even realize how I did it. Then I slightly widened the face, making Anastaria a little more plump, flicked her nose up just a little, corrected the slits of her eyes, and the result was not Aphrodite, the goddess of beauty, but a homely, warm, and smiling woman, which you could meet in reality as well as in Barleona. Now the rose seemed superfluous, so I removed it, leaving just the face. I gave it an oval background and chuckled in satisfaction. I was pleased with the result, and I could only hope that I didn't make a mistake during the design process. With that, I opened my eyes.
Item created. Blessed visage of Iluna. Neck chain detail. Description. All dark beings in the radius of 10 meters will get -20% to their stats. It is impossible to hide one's true face from Iluna. Ascension wearing this item cannot be cursed. +6 faith, +6 intellect. Item class, rare. +2 to jewelcraft. Total, 25. Recipe created. Blessed visage of Iluna. You have received the title, the Blessed Artificer. Do you wish to replace the Cursed Artificer title? Your reputation with Goddess Iluna has increased by 100. Current level, neutral. You are 900 points away from the status of friendly. The reputation with Goddess Iluna cannot be increased on account of the first kill achievement. You received Iluna's blessing level 1, +5% to all the main stats. Duration, until you lose reputation with Goddess Iluna.
After agreeing to the change in the artificer title, I attached the crafted visage to a copper neck chain and handed the completed item to Beth, who was watching my actions with huge lemur-like eyes. Something like that. I tried my best not to give away the fact that I was experiencing a great desire to jump around the room for joy. Yes! I managed to create a holy object. It might have been useless to me because I had no faith, but there were plenty of players leveling up in this stat who would pay good money for the visage. Now I had to get Beth to make me as many blessed stones as possible.
"This,"
the priestess said stumblingly as she began to come to herself,
"this is the amulet of the junior novice. It's lacking a few more stats, but this is it. If I am a priestess, then..."
Beth put the chain with the rose on herself, and immediately the big dark circles under her eyes vanished, and her face regained its natural color. A small whirlwind surrounded the priestess, messing up her hair. Beth closed her eyes in delight, and a smile lit up her face. It was beautiful and kind, exactly what a smile of an NPC playing the role of the priestess of the High Goddess should be like.
"The goddess has received me back," Beth said in a satisfied voice. "She never turned away from me. How blind I was."
"Your reputation with priestesses of Goddess Iluna has increased by 1,000 points. Current level, friendly. You are 2,990 points away from the status of respect."
"If we give all the villagers pendants like these, Beatwick would be saved,"
Beth continued.
I may not be the High Priestess, but even at the level of a junior novice I can do quite a lot. It will now take me 30 minutes, maybe less, to do one stone. I'll have to think of something to restore my strength faster. The Beatwick population is small, so we should manage this in a month. Give me all the cursed marble you've got. I'll start on it right away.
I dumped around 70 pieces out of my bag, promising to get more, and left the priestess. I didn't mention that I hoped to hang on to the stones. No point in disappointing her right now. I had just over a month until I could leave Beatwick, so I had enough time to gather more. The idea with the visage made me think that it might be good to get on with making the dwarves. It's not like I had anything better to do. I went back to the summer house, took out the lapis that Hellfire sent me, re-entered the design mode, and got back to making the warriors, or rather, the masters. I corrected their gear where it didn't seem to fit too well and put the figurines next to a piece of lapis. Strange. When I was making the orc warriors, the malachite was several times larger than the figurines, which allowed me to make all 8 pieces out of a single piece. Now, however, each dwarf filled up exactly 1 stone. Could this be linked to the fact that the dwarves are masters? Who knows? After I embodied the last warrior in lapis, I opened my eyes. Barleona should now be welcoming a legend reborn.
You have created an exact copy of the dwarf warriors from the Carmandant chess set. Resemblance 100%. Item class, a copy. +2 to jewelcraft. Total 27.
And that's it? I was staring in complete incomprehension at 8 large, fist-sized chess pieces. Something had broken, but I just couldn't understand what exactly it was. The dwarves were here and looked exactly like those I needed to craft, but they were simply miles away from being the legendary figurines. Had someone already made those? I didn't have any more lapis, so I wasn't going to repeat the experiment. It had only been 2 hours since I began my work. I had to ask someone about this, but apart from Anastaria, I didn't know anyone who could give me an answer. Asking her was simply not worth the pain, however. Never mind, I'll figure it out myself. I'll catch the monster and get to it. In the 6 days that remained until the hunt for the Mist Beast, Beth and I managed to get a ton of work done. Each day she blessed around 20 pieces of marble, which at the end of the day I made into the visage of Aluna. My reputation with the goddess didn't increase. It would seem that only the first creation of the amulet had a positive influence on the imitator playing the role of the goddess. But despite this, I managed to do some decent leveling up in various professions. Jewelcraft went up to level 42, intellect and agility increased by 2, mining and cartography reached their next maximum. Now I could fly to Farstead and increase the level of my specialization. As soon as I reached level 45 in mining, I went over to the smithy and, taking advantage of Slate's absence while he was traveling around the villages, spent 2 days mining iron ore. No point in it going to waste. During breaks between gathering resources and crafting amulets, I leveled up my smithing by smelting ingots. Although these too had to be given to Beth for whitening, it didn't really matter which materials you used to level up in a profession. Finally, the day of the mass hunt for the Mist Monster had come. 6 sentients, a rapid response force of sorts, gathered at the headman's house to discuss the plan of the capture.
"We have to split into 2 groups, with 3 people in each," the headman began once everyone took their places. "I propose the following. I and my sons will be in 1 group, and Mayen, Tisha, and Elizabeth in the other. We will start from the side of the gates, and they from the side of the forest. We will move towards the village center, and one of us is bound to spot the beast. Any objections?
Yes, I added my 2 cents. If we walk close together, the beast may take a fright and not attack. We have to separate and move at a distance of 100 meters from each other. This way we'll both have time to aid each other and not frighten the beast off.
I agree. Beth lent me her support. If we split up, we'll cover more ground. The monster won't have a chance to disappear.
Agreed. Now we need to figure out how we'll be catching him.
First of all, we need to find out what it is, proposed Beth. The beast is covered in a mist that prevents us from doing that, so Mayan and I have prepared these things.
The priestess took 4 roses of Aluna from her pocket and put them on the table.
If the monster comes into the area affected by the amulet, the mist will dissipate.
As soon as they realized what was lying on the table, all of the headman's family backed off against the wall. No wonder. They were vagrants. In the amulet's area of effect, they would turn into pooches.
The amulet should only be worn in the evening, so that no one in the village will see you in your original guise,
explained Beth upon seeing the vagrants' reactions.
We won't get far without these, so you'll have to come to terms with using them.
All right, we'll put them on.
The headman submitted to the inevitable.
I have an immediate suggestion for how these amulets should be used.
And what is it?
Asked Tisha, still sticking close to the door.
They only affect the beast at close range. If any of you run across the monster, try to put the amulet on it. It wouldn't be able to take off the holy object. We'll end up with many penalties and will become more vulnerable.
A great idea, Beth exclaimed. That's how we'll do it. We still have an hour until it's time, so let's decide on how we'll capture the monster.
The beast is a lot higher than level 100, I put in. I once caught it in a level 100 bone trap, but it barely took any notice of it. We need something more powerful to hunt it down.
Over 100 levels? The headman looked thoughtful. This isn't very good news. All right, we'll think of something.
He got up and left the room. While Beth's gaze followed him out, Tisha came up to the table and took her amulet. As soon as she picked it up, a small cloud enveloped the girl, and, after it dissipated, there was a vagrant standing next to us. Or a vagranette, even.
What do you think?
Barked Tisha, giving a hoarse laugh. Her low, chesty voice was very unlike the bubbling stream of the girl's speech in her human guise. An ordinary vagrant, I shrugged. 1 head, 4 paws, 1 tail. I can't be sure, but since you're not scratching yourself, you have no fleas.
Vagrants don't get fleas, Mayan, replied the headman, who was back in the room. Here you go. Try not to waste it. I only have 6 of them left. 1 each, exactly.
I looked at the scroll handed to me by the headman. Ice Prison Spell, level 300. This was strong enough even for Anastaria. Smashing the trap from within requires the trapped person to be at least 40 levels higher. Of course, it is possible to smash it open even if the difference is just 1 level, but it would take a very long time. It would be easier to wait for the 12-hour ban on imprisoning a character to kick in. Barleona has the following rule. You can't imprison a player for more than 12 hours. Once this time had elapsed, the player is forcefully teleported to the closest safe zone and was given a 12-hour buff banning any PK activity against him. Neither he nor other players are able to do anything about that. 12 hours later, the buff expires, and you can continue to make the other player's life hell. With the trap offered by the headman, the night monster was sure to be captured.
It took him a few seconds to smash a 100-level trap, so it looks like he's probably around level 130. A 300-level trap is a huge overcompensation. Our headman has turned out to be quite resourceful.
The trap lasts for a week, so we'll have time to load it on a cart and take it to Foss.